Indian philosophy, there's this concept of asuras, adverse forces. Mm-hmm. We could say is dark spirits or dark energy or like, they'll come to you as you evolve. They'll come and they'll test you and they'll tempt you and they'll see if they can trick you into fear, but they're still from the one source. It's all one. It's all God. Yes. It's all right.
Yeah. Fascinating.
And so they're part of the play. They're part of the training.
Yeah.
To recognize the illusion of the fear, to be able to, I mean, you might remember this clip in the movie Moana.
And I haven't seen it actually.
Oh my God, such a great movie. And she's singing to this, just with love, to this like dragon beast. And it's just like holding presence and love and just the undeniable knowingness of her eternal and fuckwithable essence. And she's just like penetrating through that illusion of the fear.
Yeah.
And so I think this is all part of the world. And yeah, look at it right now. It's just like there's so many things to be in fear about.
Sure.
But eventually, you need to find the stillness with that fear. And that's when we remember. That's when we remember who we really are. That's when we remember our eternal nature. That even death itself is just an illusion. It's part of the transition.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of A Life Economy, dedicated to exploring the intersection of technology, spirituality, and consciousness. On today's episode, we are joined by Andrew Hewitt, a visionary on new economics and system change. Welcome, Andrew.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Awesome. So I met you a while back at Planet Home, which was a really fascinating and beautiful event in San Francisco, all about creating a regenerative paradigm and, you know, what does sustainability look like in the world? And you gave an incredible presentation about system change. And you brought up all these various crises and challenges that we're facing as a society. And I resonated a lot with the presentation. That's why we're here speaking with you today. So I'm super excited and grateful to be with you now. And, you know, what's fascinating is you were talking about all these different challenges that we had as a society. And that was before COVID. You know, this was about almost a year ago. So I'm curious how has COVID shifted your outlook on which domains of system change should be prioritized?
It's a great question, Cosmo. I mean, in a way, COVID for me brought many, many more people to this wake up, this reality that the system we've been operating in is fragile. And that people like me for years, I mean, I've been at this for 12 years, recognizing that the whole system, it's so interconnected and it's you can't just fix a piece of it. You actually have to really reimagine the whole thing. And to reimagine the whole thing requires actually a depth of consciousness, a depth of wisdom that unfortunately is more rare than it should be. And so there's several levels of change, obviously, that need to happen. And I would say what COVID is really pointing to, especially what's happening in political systems around the world, is that the place we're coming from as individuals, as we go about change, is a win-lose, us versus them, competitive reality that's just actually, it's just the same raw materials that built the system that got us here. And so when you're watching whatever country you're from, I mean, it's happening everywhere in the world, and you're watching this division and this fight and this blame and this finger pointing, and it's like any energy that's sourcing from that space, from my perspective, is not going to create transformational change. And so I would say that what COVID is really revealing as people go into a state of fear and panic is that we have to change. We're actually so stuck in fear and so susceptible to downward spiral in fear and blame and finger pointing and separation that is the invitation from life. It's actually to stay awake, to stay in connection with each other, to stay sourcing love as we enter the unknown and build what our hearts know is possible.
Yes, well said. we are definitely in a sort of crucible. We're being challenged right now. And, you know, we're all indoors, isolated. And it's really, you know, it's interesting because, you know, before COVID, there is always this sense, at least for me, of this, you know, disconnection amongst just even on a local level between where I am, you know, within my neighborhood and community. And now we're in a situation where that is taken up to an extreme, and we're all wearing these masks, and we can't see smiles anymore. So there's this element of dehumanization in a way that is going on. And I'm curious how you see us making it through this moment in a successful way, where we actually come out stronger and in a more evolved society, mm-hmm. than as opposed to the track that it's one can perceive of this very Orwellian dystopian dark place that tends to be projected quite often on the news.
Yeah. What gives me hope is when I look at universe, I see patterns. I see patterns in nature. I see patterns that repeat over generations. And so when I look at this moment, I see a pattern. I see a pattern of rebirth. I see a pattern of renewal, a pattern of shedding away what is not serving. And, you know, if you look even just at birth, birth goes through stages, and there's contractions, right? And there's pain. And so, yeah, when you look at this moment, it's like we're in these contractions that are intense. But the contractions are also having us claim our will and push and call in something that's actually more aligned with life. And so I feel hope in recognizing that, yes, things are intensifying, but they're the types of conditions that match the patterns of the past and of nature that show that we're actually going to come into a whole new moment as a human species. Mm. Now, it can be extra painful. It can be extra challenging. If we steep in the fear, if we get lost in the circling mind, if we can downward spiral very quickly. And this is, I think, part of the test, right? It's like when you look at your life, the moments that you had the most profound transformation, they often included struggle, being brought to your knees till you had to actually surrender. You actually had to get out of your arrogance and your self-confidence and just actually allow. And so whatever it takes to get people to that level of bowing to life, bowing to a greater force, it's clearly coordinating all of this, I think is going to happen for people, and the transformations on the other side.
I really resonate with that. It reminds me of the Alex Gray painting where it's called Surrender, I believe, where the person is bowing down in child's pose and surrendering to what the universe is bringing to that person. And I feel like we are sort of going through something like that right now. And I've had personal experiences like that in my own life where, you think the worst thing that could possibly ever happen to you has happened. And then just a few months later, you realize it was the best thing that could happen. So I wonder, you know, things have been so tumultuous lately that not to disregard anyone's suffering, because a lot of people are suffering with COVID, but I just almost wonder if it's the catalyst that we need to really start making systemic change.
Yeah, our society, our culture, especially the Western culture, has reinforced a few conditions. One is that reinforced the celebration of the I, the achiever, the one who is celebrated, the celebrity, this individualized version of self, right? And it's also celebrated knowing and certainty and control and figuring things out. And so when you take these two things and you intensify the conditions of life, they break down because they're actually not fully aligned with the order of universe. From my experience and perspective is you need to fall in love with the unknown to be able mm-hmm. to dance in the Tao, to be able to dance in the moment and become a vehicle for consciousness to work through, right? But when we get addicted to knowing and certainty, which is essentially mm-hmm. a fear of the ego to lose control, that's where the suffering kicks in. And so you look at what's happening with COVID, I'm sure you guys saw in your social networks as well. It's like conscious communities just polarized.
Going crazy. Right? Yeah, for sure.
And it's like, wow, look at, I was there. Look at all the need for knowing, right? The
for
need
sure.
to have a clarity and then the Trump-Biden thing as well, right?
Yeah.
People that you would have never guessed would side with Trump are now becoming these big Trump supporters or vice versa. And it's because of an addiction to have a opinion and a certainty of what's actually mm-hmm. happening, so you can feel stable and secure. And I think that this great mystery is going to continue to bring us into the dance, into the bliss of actually not needing to know, mm-hmm. and to be able to find joy in that, and to be able to hold the paradox and hold the complexity. That is the only way we move from this complicated controlled system that's all based on plants and blueprints to one that's more complex and emergent. We need to become vehicles for the complex, vehicles for the emergence, vehicles for consciousness to actually coordinate through. And so I feel all of this is actually in great service to helping us see all the edges that prevent us from actually doing that dance.
Yeah. And so often that, idea of control and knowing is found out to be an illusion when we realize that these are just these momentary snippets of things that we think we know, but often the greater picture is revealed in the future. We realize we don't really know that much, but the universe's collective intelligence, if we can get people on an emotional level where they're able to receive that, I think we could see a lot of amazing things. And I think like people getting to take a break with COVID, that's a small part of it that's really helpful, and giving people the opportunity to be still and let that spontaneity of the universe come through them, or exactly. us, come through us.
Yeah.
So when you look at the world and the various crises, what opportunities do you see to transform our society for the better?
Yeah, it's all around, right? I've been working in the space of economics for about 10 years, recognizing that this profit at all cost model of business was putting us out of business as a species. And so I went into this deep inquiry and how do you change the game from this win-lose profit-driven game to more of a win-win or win-for-all game? And there are some early pioneers, you know, like Tom's Shoes or Patagonia, and I got to work with these companies and work with big Fortune 500 companies who are trying to move in this direction and create rankings of the world's top purpose-driven companies. So I was really deeply immersed in this particular category, call it changing business. And then I saw the limitations. I mean, it's phenomenal work, but it's still, the raw materials aren't necessarily completely changing. You're still using corporate structures. You're still often financing companies in similar ways, or needing to exit the company through public markets, whatever. The creek actually keeps the win-lose game more or less intact. And so this was a deep inquiry for me of like, how do you actually change the game? Like, how do you just not just change some practices, but practices that aren't actually sustainable in the face of scale and growth and new capital or founder leaving? And so I don't know, for whatever reason, that's just something that's been a deep call of my heart. And so now I enter COVID, right? And for the first time, at least in my journey, I've found this huge opening of willingness to explore this conversation at another level of depth.
Wow.
Not just in the lens of let's add some more consciousness to capitalism or corporate social responsibility, or people are actually seeing that that is not enough. to actually create the type of world that will work for all life. And so as economies shut down, as we see the fragility of global trade and globalization, and we need to move to more local models of coordinating, it actually has created this incredible invitation to experiment in new ways. And I've felt for a long time that the best way to build a new model that makes an old model obsolete is to start small, to start in a small town, small city, a small country, and start modeling it. Start modeling, build something that's better than what you currently have. And so that for me is incredibly exciting, and it's happening. Now, one of the reasons I love focusing on the world of business is it's the coordination system. So whether you take healthcare, education, or infrastructure, tech, anything, all the other sectors are built on this type of coordination system, right? So it's fundamental. It's like a deeper building block.
Yeah, the operating system of our reality.
Yeah, and I think even rather than calling it business or economics, it's simply how we coordinate as human beings. And what we're going to see as blockchain continues to advance is we can actually coordinate in a way that honors our sovereignty, that honors a self-organizing intelligence, that rewards people for pursuing their intrinsic motivation rather than just a transactional, you know, mode of operating. There's kind of new game dynamics that are going to start clicking into place, thanks to some breakthroughs in technology, but also thanks to just this moment creating enough volition for people to want to experiment because they need to experiment with something fundamentally new.
Yeah, it's so fascinating. First of all, I love your description or your perspective on what business is. That's really great. And I'm seeing in more ways now how COVID is really the catalyst that on the surface can seem like this very scary, precarious situation, which in some ways it is, but underneath the surface on a deeper level, it's really helping facilitate us, maybe perhaps on a subconscious level, to get us in, to shift our mindset, to get us to a new place where we can begin to think about new ways of doing things. For example, there's many, many more people, at least in America and probably around the world, that are more open to things like universal basic income, which Andrew Yang put on the map in a big way, you know, with his campaign. But now it's like very obvious how something like that could be very beneficial. Or, you know, as another example, you know, universal healthcare as well. Like, okay, yeah, maybe America should have something like that. Because of this crisis, we're starting to think about new ways of doing things. And that is an exciting opportunity for us that care about this sort of thing. And it invites new people to join the community as well.
Yeah, really great example, Cosmo. The UBI potential is never been greater because of the need. It's like the government ran into this real urgency of like, oh crap, we got to get checks to everybody in a hurry and just build the infrastructure to do that. And then there's people in the blockchain community figuring out how to do that in a way that would be far better coordinated than just a centrally controlled, you know, system that sends the same check to everybody. And so so it's forcing innovation, and we're seeing innovation in all sectors, right? Like think about education.
Yeah.
Kids aren't going to school. They're staying home. Parents are like, all right, we got to figure this out. You know, how do we, what's good education?
Oh, man.
You
know? Yeah.
And so you can imagine the amount of innovation that's coming through the pipes.
For sure.
Actually just, it's like we're snapping out of the trance.
Like yes, we're in this trance,
right? And we're, I don't know, just like in the busy, in the busy, in the busy, in the distraction, in the addiction, in the, all of this, we're having a moment to just pause and just recognize the beauty of nature, recognize the how much we value connection, how alone we feel when we don't have that, right? Like, wow, what a gift. Live gift. And of course, it's a tragedy, and there's pain and there's suffering, and that's like, we don't want that on anybody. But at the same time, I feel, gosh, 2020, it's just feels right on time. It's like we knew we were off. Like, how are we going to fix climate change? All of a sudden, now there's hardly any airplanes in the sky, just bam, like that, CO2 way down, right? It's like, it's, I think we need more space for awe.
Wow.
To be in awe of how intelligence is actually coordinating in ways beyond the human limitation, you know? And it's,
sure.
It's, to bask in that awe is also to come into trust with life. And to come into trust with life is to fall into a deeper ease and peace with whatever comes our way. And it's that energy of peace, that energy of stillness, it's from that place we can participate more meaningfully in bringing a different vibration, frequency, presence into whatever wants to be built.
I remember earlier when you mentioned how you think change could approach more effectively from a local level. I'm assuming by that you mean more of a bottom-up than a top-down approach. And like Ubuntu contributionism, which is like local co-op, came to mind. Time banking, things that local communities can do to sort of have alternatives to the traditional monetary systems that we use that sort of have a monopoly on how we run our lives. I'm just wondering, what are your thoughts on what local cooperation and local problem solving can do for people on a spiritual and emotional level?
So first, I think it's worth inquiring, why isn't it more natural that we focus on local? Like, well, how do we get into the situation? We're in this global dynamic, right? And then I'll get more specifically to your question on the value of local coordination. So, I mean, the ego wants more power. It wants more, wants more, wants more, right? And so especially sociopaths that get power, they're not going to settle for local. Why would you take local when you can get more, right? When you can become a global player, when you can have control of countries, or like, and so this sickness, or you could say this maybe natural human development that has kind of reached its max, has led us to this world where we have incredible power games going on. You have a very small group of people with a lot of power, and they love it, and they played the power game. Their makeup, their pathology has been supported by a system that actually incensed people to power over others and power over the natural world. So the sickest people become actually the most powerful. And so when we kind of take a step back and say, well, how do we end up in this mess?
Yeah.
You could say it's because we allowed a way of coordinating to rise that allowed those hungry for power to gain power and gain power over others in the natural world. And so now if you don't have that dynamic exist, what happens? Like, how do we coordinate? What would the healthiest people, the wisest people in the world do? And you look at Aboriginal wisdom, you look at ways wise societies have coordinated in the past, and it's in harmony with nature. And so part of the key of a local approach is to actually build like nature, like to respect the local bioregion. Like, we're shipping stuff, like food, for example, we're shipping it all across the world, getting radiated in the airlines. It's like, it's so dead by the time it arrives. And we wonder why we're chronically obese and unhealthy, right? And so it's just like this disconnection with some deeper principles of like, how much does your health improve when you eat the food that grows within your local community and it's like fresh out of the soil? Like, how much extra prana and vitality is in that food that's connecting you? I mean, there's still so many things we don't know, right?
But sure,
when you start looking at it, it seems so obvious that of course we should be living in a more local fashion. This whole global shipping stuff all around the world thing is just, it's a product of our ignorance.
This brings me to an interesting question, which is like, there are some very basic things that, you know, just on face value seem so bizarre and nonsensical. You know, what you're bringing up about the global food supply chain just doesn't make any sense, how we're shipping things, you know, across continents. And then also, you know, I just watched, you know, the Kiss the Ground documentary about how we're completely poisoning our soil, and we're on track to just have no more healthy soil in something like 60 years is what they were saying. And so it just makes me wonder, like, you know, I got to ask the basic question of why things like that are going on when it's just, you know, they're so obviously bad. Like, why would we add poison to our soil? Is this just a product of, you know, bad incentives in the economy? Is there something more sinister going on? You know, it kind of starts to go verge into sort of conspiratorial levels. And we don't necessarily need to talk about, you know, any like, oh, like there's like this bad group of people necessarily, but I'm just curious, you know, when we think of something like, okay, why are we poisoning our food? Why are we shipping our food across the globe? Things that like an average person, you know, wouldn't really make those decisions, but somehow we've evolved into this system that seems completely misaligned with what's really healthy for humans.
Yeah. There's a few different ways to enter this conversation, right? So there's one kind of dimension, which is the insanity and you could say confusion some people have, or even ill will people have to do things that are clearly bad for people on the planet. And that is, some might say it's evil, right? Or it's they're confused, or they're so addicted to power that if you make more profit by taking all the good out and putting poison in things and whatever, that's the game everybody's playing, right? And so, you know, there's that view. Now, there's a more metaphysical view that you could say, you know, we come here to Earth and it's a birthplace for consciousness. And so we're in a duality. We're constantly in duality, and it's part of the condition in which helps us wake up. Right?
Oh yeah.
And so it's, you can then see it as like, oh, it's in service. It's like, wow, do we have to get it to be so bad to wake up? Do we have to be poisoned and become so fat and sick and depressed that's actually what it needs to happen to finally snap out of the trance? I mean, so there's different ways we can kind of approach it. And you know, Indian philosophy, there's this concept of asuras, adverse forces. Mm-hmm. We could say is dark spirits or dark energy or like, and they'll come to you as you evolve. They'll come and they'll test you and they'll tempt you and they'll see if they can trick you into fear, but they're still from the one source. It's all one. It's all God. Yes. It's all right.
Yeah. Fascinating.
And so they're part of the play. They're part of the training to recognize the illusion of the fear, to be able to, I mean, you might remember this clip in the movie Moana.
And I haven't seen it actually.
Oh my God. Such a great movie. And she's singing to this, just with love to this like dragon beast. And it's just like holding presence and love and just the undeniable knowingness of her eternal and fuckwithable essence. And she's just like penetrating through that illusion of the fear.
Yeah.
And so I think this is all part of the world. And yeah, look at it right now. It's just like, there's so many things to be in fear about.
Sure.
But eventually you need to find the stillness with that fear. And that's when we remember. That's when we remember who we really are. That's when we remember our eternal nature, that even death itself is just an illusion. It's part of the transition. And so that's at least my view. And I feel it's one of the paths forwards.
Yeah. I love that. I share a very similar perspective, and I'll say you blew Summer's mind. Something just opened there for you.
Yeah, we were just talking about this like a day ago, how sometimes, or especially lately, we've just been like, does this seem like a play to you? Just the ridiculousness of what's going on, and like, or like a video game where some obstacle just keeps falling down, and it just gets to the point where it's just, you have to laugh because it's just such a comedy of errors that almost... And you just spoke directly to that. Like, it feels like a play. It feels like there's tricksters. It feels like it's part of this journey, like a game of evolution. that's happening, that we're all experiencing collectively.
Yeah, some would argue that one of the most evolved archetypes is the trickster. Because it's the one who's willing to come and just does not care what anybody thinks of them and comes in and is just ridiculous and unpredictable. And so there's so many different levels of conversation, right? And it's not the bypass, the like here and now. It's
sure.
This is where we're being tested in how much paradox and complexity we can hold without losing our center, right? Because it's hard to actually navigate these conversations with people, kind of depending on the level of awareness or kind of seeing reality through.
Yeah.
So,
and who even knows what the real reality is? So we have to hold it all pretty lightly.
Of course.
Yeah.
But I think what you just expressed, Summer, in that laughter and that joy, for me, that's an indication that you're moving more to truth. If there's more lightness, if there's more sparkle in your eyes, if there's more joy, if there's more, like when people do plant medicine journeys or LSD or whatever, when they catch a glimpse of something that they feel is more true, where does it take them? It takes them to lightness, to laughter, to like the cosmic joke. And so I feel like if you're moving towards deeper fear and conspiracy and blaming and your energy's in your head and you're just, that's not it. That's for me, that's not home and that's not truth.
Wow.
Yeah. You said something earlier that's really, really important that I want to pull out, and it's related to this cosmic joke, right? That, you know, we're dealing with these dark forces, these dark energies, and clearly they're very present on Earth right now. There's a lot of crazy shit going on that we could, you know, we could write up a long laundry list of all the weird, inverted, poisonous challenges that we're dealing with. But what you're saying is to recognize those as part of the game that they're playing, that they're serving a role for us to see who we really are in contrast to those forces, and to remember our true identity as in fact being one with both the dark and the light, that the shadow is really just an absence of our own light, and it mm-hmm. is part of us. And so to see all the evil and the scariness and the fear, to own that as part of this greater identity, to not see ourselves as necessarily separate from even the worst parts of ourselves. And that can be very overwhelming and scary to take on. You know, oh, I don't want to have anything to do with Trump. I don't want to have anything to do with COVID. I don't want to have anything to do with war or poverty. But yeah, in the greater sense of our identity, that is also part of us.
Mm-hmm. Very well said. You know, the trick of fear is to make you its agent.
Ah, yes. Oh, totally. Yeah. It's just like the systems that that keep us locked into this downward spiral. It's just sort of like it's means to its own end. So if you get gripped, if you allow yourself to get gripped by it, you're going to go down that path, and then the next thing you know, you're like becoming an agent of it.
And right now, the greatest trick of fear is making you its agent in the name of morality.
Wow. Yeah. Well, that's a tough one. That's so hard. I think wow. Everyone struggles with that. Everyone on this planet struggles with that.
Well, it's especially present right now with COVID, mm-hmm. right? The fear that is so, I mean, it's physically manifest in our masks. It's physically manifest in the social, quote unquote, social distancing, right? And how do we deal with that? How do we move past that? And in particular, you know, earlier we were talking about social media, the social dilemma. We're in this age of disinformation, and it's really challenging to discern truth.
Yeah.
When there's this asymmetric warfare, as Daniel Schmachtenberger talks about, and this idea of that these tools that once seemed so miraculous and beautiful, and they're connecting us, they're connecting the world. Now we're looking at them with completely different eyes because we see their true power to divide us and create this separation through identity politics and various other tactics. How do you discern truth? Like, what are some strategies that you use to be able to understand or pull out what is true for you?
So yeah, what is truth? And if you think about those watching, listening, think about the moments in their life when they felt truth like no other, right? Like those moments where it's like, wow, that was true. What was present? Mm. It's typically not just information, right?
Yeah, it's a feeling.
Yeah.
Truth carries a frequency. It's actually known more in, you probably point to it more in your gut, right? Than I know truth. And yet, if you look at a lot of the conspiracy stuff or people trying to come to truth, it's like it's all up here. All trying to know truth. But what if truth isn't to be known? It's to be experienced.
Yeah. Sure. It's like that. It's like that.
You could say the ultimate truth is love.
Yeah.
It's a frequency in the range of love, of unity, of and so it's a trap to find yourself trying to seek truth or trying to create more truth in the name of morality, in the name of helping the world, in the name of all this, when you're really just spinning in a frequency of uncertainty, of fear, of needing to know, of all those things. And so the more courageous leap is to come into your body and to be an embodiment of that frequency of grounded truth, of grounded wisdom, of and then sometimes that can be very paradoxical. But my belief is that in the face of all that's going on, if we had more human beings who could just stay available, action ready, hearts open, grounded, access to their power, because love isn't anemic and weak. Mm-hmm. You know, if you think of somebody like Martin Luther King, wow, like that's a man who brought frequency of love into the world with full volition and power.
Wow.
Right?
Yes, absolutely.
So we need more people who aren't going to get tripped up or pulled away by swept away by the information war, but rather they become grounded anchors who can keep bringing the frequency of wisdom, of love, of unity into the world with power.
Mm. Yeah, yeah, well said. Yeah. The mind can be a trap, and that's something that your whole point about the mind I really resonate with, and I you know, to a certain extent I still am, but I used to be very into the conspiracy theory stuff. It's, you know, it's very fascinating, but you're right, it's very heady. It's all about, oh, I think so, you know, I think so and so did this, I think this is what someone's intentions are, and it's not so much about knowing, that inner knowing that the body has this innate intelligence, and you can feel that when you feel truth. And that's where our power resides. I as you were speaking, I imagined myself coming from that state of being, of being fully embodied. And I'm reminded of a point that you made in your presentation about this difference between doing and being. And I don't think it's necessarily about like one or the other, but perhaps more of a balance between doing and being, because it's certainly the being, you know, the presence is absolutely critical for moving into a new paradigm. But we also need the doing. We need to have the action. So it's, I suppose it's really the marriage of the two that when combined and fully activated and balanced, that's what's going to propel us into essentially, I suppose, a higher state of consciousness.
And the doing is born of your being. How you do comes directly from how you're being. So
yeah.
I think you were totally right when you look at it as being the first step in addressing is how we're being.
Mm. Yeah, I like to say in the modern world, who are we supported to become?
Mm.
Are we human beings
mm.
who rise into doing, like you're saying? Or are we human doings who take breaks in being?
Mm.
And when we're human doings that take breaks in being, we go off on the meditation retreat, we
mm-hmm.
do our Vipassana yoga,
right.
whatever it is.
Right.
But our constant state is first doing. Where's that action arising from? Is it arising from stillness, from love, through the heart, or is it arising out of fear? Scarcity, insecurity, needing to know, right? And so when the doing rises out of frequency range of fear, that's actually what's getting built, whether it's through a company or whatever we're doing in the world. It's carrying that energy. And so it's like first step, snap out of the trance, rest enough in being, give yourself enough break from the culture that's entrained us this way. I mean, our generation, like we've been entrained in the culture. It's going to take some time. Like,
sure,
give yourself some space, right? And this is what's so messed up about our economic system is that people don't have the space to do this because they're right. actually trying to survive.
Yeah.
And hence going back to local so we can actually not need to be doing so much just to actually survive. And so this is, it's all so interconnected. It's not that you just sit around all day singing Kumbaya. It's like, no, we need a coordination system that co-arises with the shift in consciousness. They're both very interconnected. But yeah, the action arising out of stillness is, you could say, a taste of consciousness in action.
Mm.
Because the noise versus the signal, it's like when you're still, you get the signal. It's like something's moving through you. It's a higher order of intelligence. But when you're in the frenetic fear, scarcity, needing to figure everything out, that energy is, it's just noise. It's just mm-hmm. noise, adding more noise to the world. And so how do we create more signal? I think is being able to rest in being, resting in the unknown, resting in stillness. And from that place of deep listening, acting through the heart. And I want to bring in the nuance here so I don't kind of leave off this last analogy around sense making and trying to figure out what's going on. Because there, and this can be a bit of a paradox, but we all have a role, right? We're different instruments in the orchestra. And so somebody's role, when they're in stillness and they get moved to act, their role might be as a journalist. They might be as making sense of things. They might be incredibly brilliant at taking information and summarizing it. And so it's not to say that we don't do those things. It's just the state of being that we're in when we do them.
Right. Where is it coming from?
And often what's happening now is that people are giving their power to that kind of sense-making communities, which you could say involve the conspiracy theory communities. And rather than just being their instrument, being whatever they're meant to do, they're in such a state of fear that they're just giving their power and their ideas of the world over to these groups that are drawn to do the sense making. And that's where we have disharmony. It's like everybody has a role. Yeah. Everybody's a piece of the self-organizing intelligence of life. And coming into harmony is our great task.
It reminds me of what you said when we first started our conversation about how did we get here? And it's sort of like this learned helplessness almost that we've given our power away to this like top-down approach and been so caught up in the rat race that we're just like, you know, I got to pay the bills and eat. That's about all I can handle. But I can see the connection between the local and the relationships and the connection and the more heart-focused approach, kind of like allowing people to let go of that previous type of lifestyle.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's, this is the period of transition, right? It's, and people can say, oh, well, it's nice to say, but I still have to feed my kids and I still need to.
Right.
And so that's the challenge of 2020 on planet Earth, is we're in a transition from one dominant way of organizing and coordinating to a new one. And we've been through these. You can say they're the five epochs of civilization. You know, we've had empires, we've had religion, we have had global corporations. Like, we've had these centers of power that have been the main source of worldview and coordination before. And we're now starting the transition, I believe, to the next major epoch. And wow, what a moment to be alive, to be able to choose to be part of building the new.
Right.
And so while people can be in fear around, like, oh my gosh, everything's crumbling, let it crumble, be part of the new. Like, that's it. That's the opportunity. It's like, wow, what a ride to be alive at a time when we can be on one of the greatest adventures that happen on Earth.
Yeah. We're here for the apocalypse. And in a way, I think that's why we're here. You know, I want to explore and understand this new epic that you're describing, right? This new world. What qualities does it have? What does it really look like from your perspective?
Well, first, I think it's worth mentioning that this level of change happens over a long period of time. Arguably, and actually when you look at history, you see that each epoch was lasted shorter, a shorter amount of time than the one before, and the transition was faster. So you can say everything is speeding up. So you could even say our generation might even see two, which would be the first time a generation's ever done that if the pattern repeats.
Fascinating.
Which is interesting. But nonetheless, it's over a long period of time, right? So I think one of the greatest levels of change happening is decentralizing power. So we have a system right now where tyranny has taken over, and this happens in the past epochs. So why they typically start crumbling is because power has got so intense it corrupts. It's created tyranny. Now, when it started, it had probably good intentions, right? And so we saw this with the decay of a lot of you remember, like Martin Luther and his thesis on the church doors, you know, like, you know, revolting against the tyranny and religion. And some people know that America actually started because there's a group called the Freemasons. We're trained by the Knights Templar, the secret society, basically of mystics back then, coming from Europe, recognized that there was a tyranny of power, that power was abusing. It was not allowing people to be in freedom and sovereignty. And so they had this idea, they called it the Great Experiment, and it was to build a nation based on what's in the Declaration of Independence. And so it was actually a time, you could say it's analogous to the time we're in now, where people are like waking up and they're saying, wait a minute, there's power games at play here that are actually keeping people enslaved in some way. And now it's all getting exposed, and internet's like really exposed a lot of things. And so naturally, what are people going to do? They're going to be like, I don't want to be enslaved. And technology is also giving, it's democratizing power in a way, because it's like what we can create and how we can coordinate without relying on centralization is pretty significant. So I have a lot of hope in blockchain and that general direction of technology to allow us to move beyond central forms of control. It's like money up until now is needed to be printed by governments. What happens when the governments are corrupt? People have been ruled by governments. Well, what happens when the governments are corrupt? You know, and you're seeing it right now, right in America. It's just so obvious that the system is so fragile and so out of touch with actually serving the commons. And so when you have a technology and an awareness that these things need to change, naturally over time, we're going to start experimenting with new ways. And we can get into more detail around like what I think the orientation of a new system would be, but I think those are some of the key points.
Yeah. And when you mention printing money. This is something I wanted to bring up earlier with respect to COVID and the, you know, the $1 trillion bailouts, or is something like $7 trillion global transfer of wealth to corporations and banks. And, you know, a small fraction of which goes to the people. We got, you know, the global economy is destroyed and we're left with a $1,200 check. So thank you very much. There's this funny moment, and I don't know, you know, how many people were necessarily aware of what's going on, where, you know, we see people commenting about how, oh, you know, we can't pay for a Green New Deal, or, oh, we can't pay for better infrastructure, or, oh, we can't pay for healthcare or education, or name any variety of potential solution to creating a better planet. And then crisis hits and suddenly the Federal Reserve is able to print, you know, lots and lots of money, just in a moment, right? Lickety split. And so more people are waking up to the nature of money and how money is created. And I'm curious about your perspective on the role of the economy and money in this new paradigm, in creating a regenerative paradigm and this new epoch as you're describing. What does that look like? How is that going to be transformed from where we are now, where the economy and money is being leveraged for an immense amount of, for a small group of people to have a massively outsized level of, sorry, Siri is being triggered
here.
Siri,
that's, we were talking to her.
A small group of people to have a massive amount of control over many group of people, it transitioned into this more decentralized power structure as you're describing earlier.
So one of the greatest shifts I think we're going to see, and we're already starting to see it, is change in our understanding of currency. Mm. So to date, we've had fiat currency where you know, it's very transactional. You hold some and you trade it. And one of the challenges of our current design of economy is that there's a lot of things we're not valuing, mm-hmm. right? We're not valuing the natural world. We're not valuing mm-hmm. the impact a stranger has on us. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, so there's a lot of things that have value, and that value isn't actually being tracked or measured or mm-hmm. rewarded. Mm-hmm. And so if you look at it through the lens of a game, we have one point system that's money with a bunch of bad actors who are sociopaths, you could say, and yep. narcissists who want to control and have lack of empathy and then reward it at the cost of the commons and the cost of the environment. So it's like, how do you actually start a new type of game where the point system is different, where people are actually incented to take actions that create a thriving world for all life. So when you look through the lens of what we say tokens or cryptocurrency, and I'm not talking about Bitcoin, and this is complex, so this is like a whole rabbit hole that people can dive into. But currency is just it's the flow of energy. You look at currency as the flow of energy, you can say, okay, I can start tracking different flows, right? And so we can move from just a transactional economy where there's this like one transaction flow to a more transformational economy where there's you're actually tracking multiple different flows. And some of those flows are aren't about buying and selling goods or the impact you had on the coworker. And there's a way of tracking that with a token, or some of these ideas around gifting economies get to this type of idea. And frankly, it's all a big exploration. But when I look at it through the lens of changing the game, which has been a big part of my focus for the last decade, this is one of the game dynamics that will really have a big impact on what drives behavior and we're seeing some really meaningful experiments. I've been involved in a few and it's still early days, but, yeah.
Tell me about what are you up to now? I'm curious if you can, are there any particular projects you're open to discussing? I don't know if there's anything that you would like to share with your audience, with our audience.
Well, the ongoing project is myself. So, I mean, that's the priority, is just stay awake in the face of the madness. Keep deepening in my capacity to care and come from presence. And I mean, that has become the priority. So in addition to that, I mean, where I'm drawn is around these kind of complex ideas around like navigating system change and experimenting with like coordinating in a different way. And so I built a framework that is basically a guide from how we go from this win-lose way of coordinating towards this more kind of conscious capitalism, kind of win-win way, then to this leap to what I call win for all, which is a fundamentally, you could say, new system. But it's evolutionary. So we're not wronging aspects of capitalism that work great. We're not wronging aspects of conscious capitalism that are also working great, but we're recognizing that those are also limited, and that there's a way of starting to experiment with something holistically new. And so I'm involved in a few projects where we're using a blockchain-based platform to help people ignite projects in a way where it's not a corporation, it's not a company. It's using more like what people often refer to as a DAO, a decentralized autonomous organization. So it's kind of a new way of governing and controlling. So it's not like the founder and I have, you know, over 50% of the stock, so I say everything, and all these dynamics. And the funding dynamics are also changing because you're able to kind of pre-sell token and not need to exit the company to pay off investors. So it's actually quite meaningful, the level of change we're seeing. But it's still pretty bleeding edge, you know. It's still, I mean, imagine somebody dreaming up the idea of a website back in like 1997, 98, and showing you, and you'd be like, shopping cart with a digital, and you try to wrap your head around it, right?
Where is it?
But when, how do I put things in the shopping cart, right?
Like, do you touch? Yeah.
So we're kind of in that moment where we can see there's a real breakthrough in how we're going to coordinate, how we're going to reward people, how we're going to distribute decision making, and really in an orientation towards increasing sovereignty. So we're not getting into socialism or any of these systems that are worse. We're talking about like increasing sovereignty, increasing one's capacity to receive signal and act on it with their full volition. Right. And I think a system that does that will be one that far outpaces what we have now, because you'll have consciousness actually and creativity and passion and all those are things that come from people acting from intrinsic motivation, not just extrinsic motivation. They act from when you can like become a whole that's greater than the sum of its parts. And we've been using hierarchies. We've been using all these ways of coordinating that are really limited in terms of expressive creativity and efficiency. And so I think once it starts grounding and we work out the kinks, it becomes like a strange attractor that is just a far better way.
It
doesn't incentivize like reductionism and extractionism and things like that. I'm really dying to know. I wanted to ask you, based on what we were just talking about, as far as like these tracking systems, like there's so many cool opportunities with blockchain and just all these cool technologies that we have. I'm just wondering though, like, I know we have to take steps, and the next step that's better than the previous one is great, but like, is it really necessary? Like where we're going with blockchain and the price of manufacturing being so much cheaper, and technologies and science that are going to allow us to approach problems in a much more efficient, more cost-effective way. Like, is it necessary to track so much in our lives if there are ways to meet people's needs and manage the Earth's resources that don't require a hierarchy or someone at the top making decisions and telling everybody what to do?
Really great question, Summer. So the shift, so one of the areas, there's six kind of aspects of what I call the game. And one of it is performance assessment. And so in levels one and two, we're using measurement, like what you're saying. We're measuring everything, right? We're in level three, it's more using sensing and discernment to track what is meaningful. Because not everything that is meaningful is actually measurable. It's like, how do you measure the value of a blue sky, right? Or you have some sort of transformational experience in your life. It's like, how do you get a plan for that or measure that? Like, and so we need to get out of this addiction to just using measurement and traction. And part of the orientation of the system is that, and this is, this comes from a cultural shift. It's like, how do we as humans value and practice continuing to coming in to sense what is meaningful? And if you think of like Aboriginal wisdom, this is what they do. This is how they coordinate. They have like wisdom councils and they come back as a tribe and they talk and they discuss things. And they, this is a version of that, right? Orienting towards what is more meaningful rather than just what is measurable. Right. Now, it doesn't mean we get rid of the measurement because there's obviously value in that. But I think this is the limitation of a complicated controlled system.
Yeah. I want to know, how do we avoid, I love these ideas, by the way. And I totally have a vision. I think I share your vision for like what's possible with blockchain and the other technologies that we have. But I worry about like the systems in China that are the, like these social, credit systems. Like, how do we avoid that?
That's such a good point. I mean, technology is just going to accelerate whatever consciousness is driving it.
Right. There you go. So, that's it.
And then, so I would say if the whole thing is oriented towards liberating people into more sovereignty, then it's likely in the right direction. But if you look at the social credit system in China, it's very scary because it's actually, it has so many ways of capturing people and then controlling people in a very significant way. And so that's where the danger is.
Right. It's the consciousness behind it seems to be to put and keep people in their place.
Control.
Yeah.
This desire for control and for knowing. I'm reminded of the point you were making earlier about, going through this COVID situation that we're desperately looking for a sense of understanding to make meaning out of the situation, the desire for knowing. And we've, you know, our culture really incentivizes and has over-indexed our capacity for, you know, for the intellect, that rational, logical part of the brain, at the expense of the more intuitive, emotional, feeling aspect of making sense of the world. And so I think a part of what we're reclaiming, what's part of the Renaissance, is coming back into balance with those parts of ourselves that we're able to more fully integrate all the different dimensions of what makes us human. And that part about what value of how can we ever hope to quantify the value of a blue sky? And I was like, yeah, that's $10. it's an excellent question, right? You know, there are some things that we can't put a monetary value on. And where does that leave us? How do we...
this is where you rest in the not knowing.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Well said. Right. And from there, there's that stillness, that peace. And I'm reminded of this question that I have, you know, so people are worrying about COVID, about the apocalypse. What strategies or words of wisdom do you have to help people return to their center?
So first, I don't want to discount the evolutionary importance of fear in terms of like survival. So if somebody's in a survival situation, you know, you don't just sit and try to bypass it with meditating or something like this. It's actually if the fear is just spinning as an illusion in your mind versus like in your body, your true senses are online and you know you need to act, that's actually signal. You're receiving signal to act. It's like be in alignment rather than just being sucked away in some sort of illusion of some story of the non-existent future that's not even true, right? So there's a difference there. And I think there's a real importance at this moment for people to decide where they want to be and start getting their essential set up and simplifying, not out of panic, not out of like, oh my God, I'm going to build a bunker in, you know, in Nevada, but out of really just like tuning into what's true for them. And maybe that's staying in the city. Maybe that's going in nature, whatever it is. But to like create the space to enter a new moment, to enter a new chapter of life, rather than like assuming things are going back to some sort of normal or wanting them to go back, just be like really embrace this incredible moment of change. Tune in more deeply to what's actually meaningful for you. What are your actual needs that you want to be met regularly? And ensure that those needs are met and be prioritizing that in some way. I think that would be the simple thing. And resilience obviously is going to be a key tool for navigating any level of change. So anything that helps people stay in peace and stay empowered, because it's not always peace either. It's like stay empowered despite circumstance.
Yeah, it's really important to have personal power and empowerment. And the idea is to get away from power under and power over. We don't want to be letting the current systems have power over us and then turning us into victims. And then there's just this whole dynamic. I agree.
So I think we should wrap up soon. But before we go, I'd love to just dive a little bit deeper into that creative visualization of a life economy, the world that we're looking to create, that we're excited about. You know, so much of this conversation is about system change and imagining, you know, the world that we want to live in. That's in large part what this podcast is about. And you're someone that has spent a lot of time thinking about this and imagining this. And I'd love to get a sense of what excites you about the future, a future possibility of how we can relate to each other and to the planet, and you know what the highest potential you hold for humanity looks like.
My greatest hope and highest potential I hold for humanity. Well, I think first is I don't feel drawn to paint some sort of like utopia, and some sort of need to get there any faster than what's actually just in divine order. And as we were talking about earlier, to see the value in all the contrast, to see the value in that the struggle plays in waking up, and that when you look at it through the lens of, it's like in certain philosophy, you'd say to die before you die is to truly live. So, or in India, they call it the dwij. It's your second birth, the birth of your consciousness. right? So if that, if you look through the lens of that being what Earth is creating this space for, and it's actually part of why we're here, is to have this experience to then wake up and remember our interconnectedness with all life, to remember our eternal nature, to feel the like effortless bliss of being, then views of utopia and trying to rush towards it are kind of in contrast to actually the perfection of the design that's here right now, right?
Mm.
So what gives me the greatest hope is witnessing like unreasonable joy in the face of suffering.
Mm.
Witnessing just courageous love, right? And people who are just fearlessly anchoring in a depth of truth and in a struggle in a moment of, it would just seem like so unreasonably challenging to arrive and still choose love in the face of whatever's going on. It's like, so that gives me hope. That's like, that feels like truth. There's something about that act that feels more true. And so I think we're going to see much more of that, as much as we're going to see downward spiraling. We're going to see some like really incredible examples of choosing love and choosing unity and what that does for people.
Lovely.
Yeah.
Well said. Where can people learn more about you or your work?
You can find me on Facebook, and although I'm not posting as much these days, I'm actually been kind of behind the scenes intentionally. Everything I'm saying, just really just being with this moment. Like I haven't been outward, haven't been trying to create a platform to share stuff. I've been, just joining the human family in this moment of massive change, and just being available to serve where feels meaningful. And also like everybody's navigating something right now. Like it's been such a journey, like in my own unique ways. I've had such a challenging 2020 and yet beautiful and transformational. So, what I would say, if somebody's enjoyed this, you know, they can search me, Andrew Hewitt, on Facebook and follow me. And that's probably the best option.
Excellent. Yeah, same here. It's been definitely a roller coaster for us as well. And same, I think, with most people that are paying attention. Cool. Well, thank you so much. This has been a really fun conversation. Lived up to the hype. And we're super grateful. Summer, anything else you want to add before we jump off?
Oh, man, I could talk to you for a long time, so maybe another day.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah. Excellent.
I love your energies and just who you guys are being, and it's been really enjoyable. I just felt like we could really jam together effortlessly. And thanks for doing what you're doing and following your own intuition and intrinsic motivation to just create this space. It's a beautiful service.
Thank you. Yeah,
we appreciate that. Thank you. Well, for those listening and watching, thank you so much for tuning in. We'll be back in a few weeks. If you're enjoying this podcast, please share it with a friend. Visit alifeeconomy.com. And if you haven't already, make sure to subscribe on iTunes or leave us a review. That would be amazing. For now, have a wonderful weekend or week, wherever, whenever you are. And we'll see you soon.